Alright, so what we're doing now, we're kind of picking up from, it's been a little while, but Melachim Aleph Perachaf. So if you recall, so Hashem basically had Achav go to war, right? Go to war against this Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram. And he even asked, Achav said, who's going to lead them? Because he thought he's not going to be the one to lead them, because he knows he's not on Hashem's good side. But the Navi said, no, you're going to lead them. And he led them. And if you recall, originally the Jews had a strong stand against Ben-Hadad and his army. And he says, oh yeah, that's because he's the king of the mountain, not the king of the plains. And they went to the plain and they fought. And then he says, and basically, so that's what happened. So then they went to war again, and they took again this big army again, Aram, and the Jews went, and the Navi came and told Achav that so says Hashem, because Aram said is that Hashem is the God of the mountains, and not the God of like the plains. Therefore, I'm going to give you this great nation into your hands, and everyone will know that I am Hashem. Okay, so he told Achav, basically, he's going to give it over Ben-Hadad and the army into their hands, and it will be Kiddush Hashem. Because they're basically proclaiming a false idea. Hashem is just another one of their gods, the god of the mountains, god of this, god of that. He says, no, God is the god of Hashem, is Hashem of the world, everything, and therefore, it's like Echol Hashem, the way Aram is, you know, claiming it. So he says, in order to basically show that no, it doesn't matter, there's going to be a great victory.
So is that also to make it clear that it wasn't because of Achav's schus that they're going to win the war? It was purely because Hashem wanted to show that.
Right. I guess so, right.
What they're saying is not true.
Sounds that way, yeah. So then, sure enough, they camped against each other. And what happened was that all of a sudden they ran away. The Jews killed Aram with 100,000 people, and then other ones ran away, and miraculously a wall fell on 27,000 people, and it left Ben-Hadad alive. Okay, it left him alive, and he ran into the inner room within a room, like some private secret chamber. And then they said, so now he was so afraid, so then the servants told him, he says, we heard the Malchei Beis David are very kind, the kings, they're Malchei Chasad, right, let us, like, take sackcloth and go, and we'll try to talk, get to, you know, arouse his mercy. And sure enough, they did that. And and he says, and sure enough, they did. And he says, Chaya, called him Achi. He says, he's my brother. Apparently, Achav identified with Ben-Hadad. And the people played on that identification, and sure enough, they said, you know what, we'll make a peace treaty, and I'll give you back the cities that my father took, and all that. This is what Ben-Hadad told Achav. And they made a peace, and they sent them away. Okay, that's where we got up to, basically. We showed how there's a certain idea of, like, the Jews are people of Chesed and Rachamim, but that's a good midah, insofar as it's properly placed, but just pure Rachamim, without any seichel, just applying it to Russia, who wants to kill you, is not really, is on the contrary, that's not an idea of the Torah. You see, it's terrible chay. And because of that, here it is, you could let the enemy, who's really, doesn't really have any remorse or anything, he's just trying to play you, you know, you're letting him live. And that was a mistake, okay? That was a bad move. And now we're going to see the consequence of that move. But that was basically, he was entrusted basically being the general to lead them to victory and to bring Kiddush Hashem, and the general is the powerhouse of the army. So you leave him or leave him alive, it's like the whole God's doing these miracles, killing all these people, and it's like you're undermining the whole effect. Okay, so now we're up to Pasuk Lamed Hay. Okay, I think we read this last time, but I don't think we really analyzed it. So it says, "Veshachem ibnei hanaviim amar al re'ehu b'dvar Hashem." Akenina. So one of the sons of the neviim, okay, one of the students of the neviim, said through the word of Hashem, he said to another navi, hit me. Okay, give me a rasha. Okay, hit me. But the other, he don't want to hit him. He refused. I'm not going to hit you. You're an Avi. I am Arlo. And he says, Yana Shelo Shabbat the Kol Hashem. Because you didn't listen to the Kol Hashem, it's Nevuah, because it was a Nevuah. I mean, he says, he's an Avi and he commanded. He said, hit me. It's Var Hashem. So in Chaholich Meiti, you're going to go away from me, Vihitcha Aryeh. And the lion's going to eat you. Vahilech Meiatso. He laughed, I can tell you how you are back here. Sure enough, the lion hit him, came in and hit him. Okay.
What does the lion hit him?
It means he killed him. And struck him. Okay. So this is not a... It says, Rashi says, Simen zera alachav. This is like a sign, which is bad for Achav. Shamadah navi, apiagvura. Hakos is Ben Hadad. The Navi told him to hit Ben Hadad, and he didn't hit him. So too, Shamal Navi Dvar Hashem Akeni. So to this Navi told this other guy to hit him, and he didn't hit him. Keshem Shnei from Isaiah, just like it was punished. The Navi, the one who hit the Navi, was punished. So to Achav for not hitting Ben Hadad is going to be punished. Right, and you see, he was punished severely. And then, of course, Ishai Shachif's son found another man. By Yomar Keni, now he said, "Hit me." By Yakei Hoish, Hakei Ozash. Sure enough, the second guy isn't messing around. So he hit him, and he started bleeding. Okay, fine. So maybe before we go further, so what's the idea here? What's he trying to show? This idea, right? Rashi's tying this to Achav story. All right. What's the message that we see from this thing? This is trying to teach us that. So hit me, didn't hit him, he got Yechai Misa, it's a result of similar to Achav. What's the point?
You listen to
Bar Hashem. Okay, but you know, you can listen to Bar Hashem in a lot of the respects. It seems to be drawing a more close parallel than just that. You know, although that's true, it seems to be something to do with hitting, you know. Be more what?
There's a. I think it's showing that there's a time when it's appropriate to cause harm.
Right.
What we would think of as causing harm.
Right. Yes.
But I don't understand the second part because it doesn't seem like there's parallel to that.
It doesn't seem like parallel to that in what? In this case?
Yeah, because he said he got the so the other guy did hit him in his hand, and then nothing happened. Like he did a reward or something.
Oh, well, it doesn't say he got a reward, but I mean, he carried out the Dvar Hashem. I mean, maybe he did. You know, it just doesn't tell us the rest of the story. It just goes on to say why he, what, you know, what he did with his bloody, you know.
I just, like I
said,
I might be misunderstanding the whole thing, but I understand the first half of it, like the first bit hit him, and he got punished for not hitting him. But I don't know what the second part of the story does.
Well, the message is to Achav, then, you know, hold off. You're asking a follow-up question on your answer, so let's just hold off. Maybe we'll get to that in a minute. Okay, I think what you're saying is good, so let's develop the thought, and then we'll see if we can answer your question. Just give me 1 second. Yeah, what she's saying is that, he's showing him this similar point like we said before, but is that violence and hitting a person has like a part of them which is not into violence, feels like it's good to be merciful and peaceful and don't hit people and don't kill people, right? We're trained, and this is how we feel, that's like the bad part of us, like right as a kid, aggressive and wild, and then you kind of temper that and you grow up and you feel there's no place for that type of thing. It's never okay to use violence, and it's never okay to hit, and it's never okay to kill. That's kind of a part of the way we feel. But that's not true. That's not true. Sometimes it is appropriate to hit and to kill, and you know, there is such a thing as evil people, or there is such a where you have to kill them. And a person that's like a liberal mentality, we never ever do anything like that. Well, then you're going to let your Rasha, you're going to let your enemies kill you. Right? And that's what he says, rather than The Radak says, he says, an interesting thing. The Radak says that it's mercy on Rishayim is really cruelty. Because at the end of the day, they're really going to do war. So you think you're being kind, it's really the most cruel thing. Because in being kind to, let's say, a killer, you think you're being nice to him, but you're being cruel to all his victims. Right? So you can't, you know, you're just moved by the immediate, you know, cruelty, or the immediate, mercy. But you're being very short-sighted. Because by letting a killer walk, or letting a suicide bomber live, or all these types of things, letting terrorists live, you're being merciful to them, but you're being cruel to the people, all their victims. And these are evil people, and the victims are innocent people. So that's totally misplaced. But somehow the emotion just feels like a cruel, you know, mercy doll. Mercy takes this to the game, and that's the name of the game. Everything's about mercy. But that's not true. And that's what the Navi was showing this message, is the Navi, the Hadvar Hashem, is hit the Navi. He's a Navi, and your mother tell you not to hit Navis or other people or whatever. Yes, but you don't just listen to that, so your mother tells you, because that's for a kid, that's you have to basically get them to hear the idea, is that you don't hit. But then when you get more mature, you realize you don't hit innocent people, you don't hit for no reason. But if the Navi, the Hadvar Hashem, tells you hit the Navi, even if you don't understand that, you do it. Like if the Navi tells Avraham to kill Yitzchak, then he goes and does it. And if the Navi tells Achav to kill Ben Hadad, then he kills him. And there you can even understand it. And here the Navi, presumably this other Navi didn't even understand why. So that, you know, but whatever, but one is it's Yivashem. And you have to get out of your head this idea that hitting or killing is evil, per se. It's hitting for no reason, which is the problem. So that was like one idea, which it could be that you could learn. It's a seven. You learn from this instance, which could be, I don't know if that was the point of this, but a message.
You think he didn't think it was the Dvar Hashem to kill?
Well, that's the other person. They asked that. They say that, how does he know it's the Dvar Hashem? I forgot who said that, who asked that question.
Because the Ben Navi was telling him.
Right, he said Dvar Hashem.
Yeah.
But he thought he was lying. Right? Why he didn't do it, that was lying?
Yeah. I know. I think they say. It says, how does he know he was B'Shem Hashem? He didn't ask for a sign. So he says, when a person is muchzak as a Navi, he's established as a Navi, then you don't ask for him a sign. And you have to basically trust when he tells you something. Well, he says it was Dvar Hashem.
He had to have
Nevuah
three times or something? Is that
Mufsak? No, not exactly. Just give me 1 second. Yeah. No, the way you be Mufsak as a Navi is you have to prove yourself. Prove yourself means, I mean, the Rambam brings down at least, is that he basically has to predict the future to the every last detail. Mm-hmm. Like every single thing, and nothing can go wrong. And if he does that a number of times until it's intellectually satisfying that there's no way he could have done this by chance, Then you accept them as a Navi, and then you're not allowed to question anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so there is a point of questioning. I think there's a shock, because when says you can't, it's like a law of the questioning, Yosar Midai. Like there's a point, what's Yosar Midai? It's not fixed. But I think the point is that there comes a point where the mind is satisfied, and after that it's just like an emotionalism, because you're doubting the Navi, or because you're looking for miracles, or because you're whatever, and then you have no right to do it anymore. But there's like a fine line that you have to draw. To not question him is also bad. Because you don't just believe, you can't just be gullible. And the guy says he's not be accept him. So there's like a proper balance where the mind says, you know, dictates that you look into it.
But we don't have Nevuah today. So if a great rav, even if they have smicha, you know, if a great rav tells you that you have to kill somebody because they're a Russia, are you supposed to listen to that? I mean, we don't have the ability to make that decision today.
I mean, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, if it doesn't have to, you're saying, could someone paskin that? If Rav paskins that as your shayla and he's your Rav? He's your Rav, let's say now. Does he think that we are there?
Yigal Amir said that his Rav told him that Sharon was, that Rabin was a Rodef. and he should kill Robin.
Okay.
So he had a psak from his rav
that
this is a rodev and he's causing harm to the Jewish people and he should kill him.
So what's your question, just in general? So you want to know when do you listen to your rav's psaks?
Would you ever listen to a psak to kill somebody today? Ever?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Sneeze this week.
Huh?
Aaron said Rebbe said he breaks somebody's knees this week.
Yeah, for the amount.
Molesting or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He said that he would.
He said he would.
That sounds like a good plan. I think there'd be a lot less
molesting. That's something you want you to quote.
He said there's times when, something like that, like there's times when you could do something that would be like,
prevents other people from doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm asking everyone exactly. You weren't there?
No, but I'll ask him also.
And you take measures into your own hands sometimes. That's basically
what Baruch Goldstein went to a mosque and started shooting bullets at people who were praying in a mosque because...
Yeah, look, these things are tricky. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I would say in general, you know, you have to know who your posek is. When your posek paskins, you're psak and you listen to him, unless you have a crazy posek, well, then you should. I mean, it's like a different type of a question. What are you supposed to do? When should you listen to your rav? I don't know if there's a rule you could never, if your rav, I don't think it should be that if your rav tells you to kill, then don't. Depends. I mean, if he's a good posek and he tells you, then, I don't know. What do you know? Unless you know that there's no such psak like that. I don't know there's such a thing. If there's no such, it's like a halakhic psak. If he's a real posek and he tells you that that's what the din requires, then, I mean, let's say your posek tells you, go kill the Nazis. You're in Nazi Germany. He says, make a war of uprising, go kill them. You say, no, we don't kill. You know, I'll kill the guard because he's the guy who tortures Jews. You say, don't listen to him. I mean, so every case is different. But
in the case of the Nazis, it was probably a clear case of self-defense.
Yeah, fine. So my point is that these are decisions for poskim. And if you have a posek who's a legitimate posek, and he tells you that this is what the psak dictates, then I don't know if a person could say, no, I don't listen to the psaks about killing. I mean, it's a subtle judgment call. Now, like anything, you wouldn't just listen to, I mean, you have to know who your rav is. So it's a bad idea to get a rav who you think is crazy, or you think is crazy positions. But if your rav you think is a person who you think is a legitimate posek, and to your mind he's legitimate, and he tells you this, I guess you should give it a second thought. Maybe he's crazy. But, I mean, I don't know if there's a rule you can never, ever kill nowadays.
This is just weird because it's one Navi telling another Navi. You know,
that's true, but that's true, but that doesn't matter. I mean, a Navi could tell another Navi do something, and he could...
Right, it's weird he didn't do anything.
Oh, it's true, it's weird he didn't.
Yeah.
It's true.
It's like a Navi listens to Nebuah.
It's true. But, you know, Yonah didn't go on his own Nebuah, right, originally. So it's not so easy to do these things. It's not so easy to hit another Navi, you know?
Just hitting him, he's not like killing him.
Well, he gave him a bloody, I mean, he wanted him to hit him, to give him a bloody,
first,
you know.
She's like, yes, all right, I'm ready.
Just a hit. Just a bloody nose.
Yeah,
that
was just hitting.
I mean, I'm just saying, it's especially, you know, hitting like an authority figure, another Navi. Right. It's like, you know, look, apparently he was a chayit, he's just having misa for it. But I mean, even though he's a Navi, you see, this is the thing though. I mean, sometimes it's even harder. A Navi's like a very good person, a righteous person. Mm-hmm. And a good person feels like, I don't do things like that. You know, and a Navi said so. Well, I don't know. It must be. But that's what he says. Once he's a Navi, then you don't say every time he says something, oh, maybe not. Come on. Can you prove me the Navi again? No, you don't do.
Does he have to say in Hashem's words?
I would think so.
But the second time he says,
oh, I understand. It could be already
clear. The first one already?
Yeah, it could be already clear, you know? I don't know. I don't think if anything he says, like he says to his kids, let him take out the trash, and now all of a sudden he's going to have to kill him for not listening, you know? Presumably it has to be in the, you know, a command in the context of a nevuah. You know, but I don't know why in the second time he didn't say it. It could be it was obvious already. Yeah, it's not clear how many people this was in front of or whatever, but it could be it was already clear that it was a darshan. You know, and then the lion ate him. Presumably people knew about that. You know, so now he told them again. The other guy is obviously going to listen, and he knows it's the boy. You know, it's an interesting thing to notice. It doesn't say
hitting,
that, but
hitting is one of those things that the Rambam would say that, you know, like Kas and Gaba, you should go to the opposite extreme to avoid it or something.
Yeah, it's true, but still at the same time, That's what he's saying. This is the point. You know, we can't be too. You're right. These are the types of things you can think.
There is a place for casting gaba, yeah. But very rare. Yeah, right. The same thing with hitting. You would think that it would be very rare that there would be a place for hitting.
Yeah, you'd think so. But, yeah, there is a place. You know. Yeah, it can be very rare. It doesn't mean never. And therefore, you have to have it within you to be able to do things like this, you know? Situations do arise. You know, there are situations that arise, and a person has to, you know. That's what he's saying. There was Achlus' problem because of this. And this is an interesting point. An interesting point to think into is that it's cruelty to the innocent, to the tzaddikim, to be merciful to Rishon. You know, so you think you're being all merciful, but it's just a trick. Your emotions are tricking you. You're not really being merciful. You're being cruel. You're really just letting innocent people die. And what do you think this Rosh is going to do? He's just going to go and become a tzaddik? He's not becoming a tzaddik. He appeals to you and he begs and all that. Now you think he's, you know, it's not true. So it's really cruelty. You're emotionally, you're doing it because you want to be merciful. You're not doing it because you want to be cruel. But if you think into the big pit, the long-term picture, you realize that it really is cruelty.
Is that what happened with Shaul and Agag?
Yeah.
Same situation.
Yeah, the Radak brings that down. He says the same thing with Shaul. Yep, that's why Hashem got very angry. He lost his kingdom for that. So, I mean, that's, I think, a major idea in Torah, is that there's no emotion which we follow intrinsically. Okay? There's certain emotions which are generally good. Like they say, it's the Midah, Klai Yisrael, they were Rahmanim, and we're Baishanim, and we're Gomli Chasadim. Certain Midahs, which generally Rahmanis is good. But that doesn't mean jump on the Rahmanis boat. Because sometimes Rahmanis, you gotta jump off of that boat. Sometimes, any Midah, any emotion is, you could say it's generally in line with your mind, in line with truth. But if you just become a person who is Mr. Rachamim, then you can end up making big mistakes and you can make mistakes, you can be cruel. You know, at times. So that's what the Torah holds, is you can't embrace an emotion per se. You can embrace it because it's in general in line with Mitzvah Baruch Hu, in general it's a good idea. But just to grab hold of any emotional attitude is not a Torah value. Like people say that, he's so innocent he couldn't even kill a fly, you know, things like that. You know, that's not a Torah idea. See, David HaMelech killed lots of people, many, many people. And he's the Mashiach Hashem. So, like, he's not exactly in line with our idea. He's not exactly in line with our idea. I mean, if you hear or read about David, he's not exactly in line with people's idea of a great person. But, I mean, if you read the Navi, he's talked about in the highest regard, the greatest of people ever, you know. Mashiach Hashem, and he was killing people, killing the enemies of the Jews right and left. You know, he's a very bloody person. But it's not exactly, you know, may not make an art school guzzle book about him, or whatever, about his, but, you know. But I think that's partially like a Christian saint is like that idea, you know, idea of someone who never, you know. Although, I don't know, they're pretty violent also. Somehow, I don't know, I forget that.
Crusades, anyone?
Yeah. Alrighty, so that's, I think, a lesson. It's an important lesson. I mean, it's not, you know, it's true that I would agree with you on in general, in our lives, we're not going to have it. It's a little unlikely that we're going to have to kill people. But you never know.
And women are not mechiyav in mechiyas amalek, I think.
It's malachama. But there is such a thing as, like, let's say, for instance, someone was telling us that someone has a gun. Let's say you have a gun, and someone breaks into your house. So there's a story of a guy in yeshiva years ago, a guy Kitzel broke into his house, and he shot the guy. He missed, but, you know.
Scared him off.
But bottom line is that he was willing to shoot at the guy, you know? Would you be willing to shoot at the guy? Somehow you feel emotionally you can't do something like that, but at the same time, you could be sitting, you could risk your family's life. So you have to weigh these things out. I'm not saying like simple, but I'm just saying is like, I think it would be hard for us to kill somebody. or to shoot at somebody, even if they were, you know, coming after, I don't know, I'm not sure, like your emotions kind of change if they're coming after your family and whatever, like it's hard to know. But I'm saying there is a time of self-defense, which is sometimes you get it because you have this feeling like we can't do this certain things that would stop us from really defending even our family, you know. So there are situations, you know, these are far-fetched types of situations, but they do happen. You know, but I think that more importantly is, or for instance, it doesn't have to be killing someone. Maybe someone's like a bad influence, or someone's, you have to talk badly about somebody. You know, we don't talk bad about somebody. Let's say someone's like a bad person and they're really influencing people negatively. You know, so you have to go after them. You have to talk down against them. You have to stay away from them. So in general, you know, sometimes you have to go, you know, you have to take somebody on. What?
So in Gedalia, the message of Gedalia was that he was Tzadik Harbeh. He didn't listen when he was told that somebody was going to try and kill him.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was one of the... during the time of the Horban Beis HaMikdash, and there were rebellions going on, people ratting them out to the... So... He should have listened, and he should have killed that person before he came to him.
Or at least known
to protect himself so that when the man came after him.
That was totally off topic, but I think this could apply to like a lot of instances, you know, like where you're, or a lot of Dvar Hashem or whatever, like, you know, if, like, your emotions are telling you a lot of times to not do the right thing, you know, and like, to fight them is the important thing, and to know their place, and to know when you should look, when you should
get exactly.
Should I answer the poem, please? What's the message?
Excuse me.
What's the
message?
Yeah, right. It's true. That's what answer of Shad is. It says, I think Rabbi said, it says you should serve God with both your Yetzers, with your Yetzer Hara and your Yetzer Tov. So it says, what does it mean to serve God with your Yetzer Tov? Yetzer Hara means like conquer Yetzer Hara. What does it mean to serve God with Yetzer Tov? So he said, Yetzer Tov is like, I mean, a different context. Maybe Yetzer Tov doesn't always mean the same thing. But Yetzer Tov could mean like your inclination. It's also Yetzer, but your inclination towards Tov. It could be like your conscience, or that type of, you know, those types of feelings, your mercy. And that's why sometimes you have to serve God and conquer your Yetzer Tov also. You know, so sometimes it's easier to conquer Yetzer Hara than Yetzer Tov, because you feel like you're doing something wrong. But sometimes you have to do a mitzvah, you feel like you're doing something wrong by doing a mitzvah.
But couldn't your Yetzer Hara be like positive results, like things you think are positive, like compassion, could be your Yetzer Hara? Really?
Yeah, it's just a question of what you call it.
Right.
In general, in one sense, you call it Yetzer Hara, but if you're talking about like the psychological mechanism, you could call it Yetzer Hara, it would be like your instinct, your like base instincts. And like your Yetzer Tov would be more like your conscience. But in this sense, it's telling you, your Yetzer Tov is telling you to do Ra. You know, so philosophically, it's you call it Yetzer Hara because it's telling you to do something to do Ra.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But it's like, it's the mechanism which ordinarily tells you to do good things, you know? So in a certain sense, you call it your Yetzer Tov.
Okay.
And it depends how you, this is a matter of telling you how you call it.
Right.
But yeah, that's the point. The point is that you can't just go with this Yetzer, that Yetzer. Yetzers are just inclinations. You have to always be ready to use your mind. Chazal say, actually, Kol Tam Chacham She'eino Nukim V'Nukim Terkin Nachash She'eino Tam Chacham. A Tam Chacham who isn't willing to take revenge like a snake, you know, to lie in wait and to take revenge on his enemy, or on someone who is like Mechal Shem Shemayim, is not Tam Chacham. Like, he has to be willing to go after someone who's like is Mechal Hashem. So, you know. Yeah.
Is that the message of Akedas Yitzchak?
It's one of them, yes. That's what he said, Kavash Rachma Vlasasam Chabalev Shalom, that he conquered his mercy. That's what the Ram talks about. It's the greatest emotion that a person could have, the emotions, Avram's emotion for love for his son, it's like his emotion, he was carrying on his mission and all that. And all that, all those emotions he was willing to conquer. Because so he knew the Dvar Hashem was the other way. Yeah, it's true. That's an important idea. Is that there's no emotion as strong and as good as it you think. Love of a father for a son, the idea of not killing people, all of those emotions, just left them aside and he went and followed the Varsha. So this is but it's not a simple idea, and this is saying this is one of the problems with Achav, is that he basically fell into this trap, right? Is that he basically was kind and merciful to Ben Hadad, and Ben Hadad knew that. He says, "I heard the Jewish people are very kind, you know." So they play on that, but that's not. We shouldn't be identified per se as kind. I mean, look, it could be we should know as kind, but at the same time, we have to have a tough side also. You can't just be pushovers and let Rishon go because they know how to talk to us.
What about the concept of Avram was known for Achnas Sarachim and his tent was open and right. On four sides or whatever. And you have to be careful who you let into your house also. Like I once said to somebody that I'm not just gonna let any stranger be a guest in my home because you have to be cautious that you're not letting. So how do you draw the line there?
I don't know, you have to be intelligent about it. I mean, you can't risk your life because you want to be kind. That's not really good kindness.
I'm not even talking about risking your life, I'm just talking about risking your children's sanity or...
I don't know, these things have to be evaluated case by case. You know, they have to be evaluated on a case by case basis. But I mean, sometimes... Yeah, I don't know, it depends. And sometimes that's true, and sometimes it's really you just don't want things. So, you could rationalize things by saying, things like that. So that's why, there definitely is a place for saying, it's not reasonable. And there's a place for saying, I don't want it, and therefore saying no, So, every case is a little bit different. It's hard to say a general rule. Yeah. Okay, so this is one thing that basically was a siman to Achav, is that this is a bad thing. You don't listen to the Hashem, the Nabi, the head, one Nabi, not hitting another Nabi. That's it. Right? He gets killed, Chai Misa, a lion. And it seems to be a lion, it's like a public, gruesome, type of a thing. People will know about it. It was supposed to be public, this idea. This is an important idea. That the Jews, it seems like the Jews shouldn't have felt. Ah, Achav, what a great, kind, compassionate king. That was, that's apparently part of the message. It could be as part of the message to the Am. There's a place for, this sort of thing is misplaced mercy. Because you could have imagined, how's the Am going to react now? Are they going to react and feel like, the Jews are Malchei Chassad? Or are they going to react and say, no, that was a bad idea? It seemed to be this is a message not just for Achav, but for the Am at large. And we should have killed them. Yeah. But it's very, apropos in a modern day, with a liberal type of mentality of insulating terrorists and all that stuff,
So I'm reminded that your mind falls out.
Yeah, I mean, that was, they underestimated the evil. I mean, it happened with Hitler also. The world kind of underestimated what Hitler would do also. They kind of, try to appease him and that type of, it's a common theme.
So the concept of emotions that are generally good, but... there are times when you have to suppress those emotions. So you're saying about Rachmanim, and then the next one is Ben Shanim. So a big issue right now in the Haredi world is that they take modesty to such an extreme that it's treating women in a degrading way. Like they'll hand letters to women on buses who are dressed modestly that say, oh, you're such a blah, blah, blah. I'm not even going to say the language that they use, but it's horrible. You're a complete, prostitute. You should just take off your sheitel and your clothing and go, to the chiloni world. Why do you even bother? Because they consider something that she's wearing to be. Like, there's such a lack of respect that they because they value this modesty, this, above everything else, above even treating women with respect. So they take it to such an extreme.
Right, that's another example.
But there's a time for modesty and there's a time for, backing off a little bit on that.
It's true. Yep.
Sorry?
It's interesting.
In Israel, there are people that they won't sit next to a woman on an airplane. They'll cross to the other side of the street if a woman is there. They take it to such an extreme that it's like it becomes treating women with just
Yeah.
Like there's something wrong, even if they are dressed modestly.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. It's like sometimes you could take some ideal which you see in the Torah, which is an ideal in its place, and you just make that, like you mistake that for the emotion of that thing, you know, and make that, you know, just run with that emotional thing and just go with it to its fullest extent, and you drop your mind at the door and you're just going to forget to use your mind. Torah is about balancing all the different midos with your mind, not just to take something which seems appealing to you and just jump on the bandwagon of whatever, it's near the nearest bandwagon, and say, you know. It's a part of the whole Torah. You're right, you're going to start doing crazy things because you're jumping on one midah. You got to realize you're in that something's wrong. Yeah. Yeah, it's common. It's common. For sure. But it's good to look into it. I mean, this is definitely something that we have in ourselves also, in our lives, I'm sure. This type of thing is where we have emotions, you know, which we feel like are good emotions, and they're not really. You know, they kind of hold us back from our own Hashem. You know, it's kind of easier to see them in other people, but sometimes maybe we could look and see if we could discover our, you know, that's the tricky part, kind of discovering our own, you know, and everyone has their own different things, and, you know? You gotta kind of spy on ourselves and try to, you know, see where we have things like this. Because that's, you know, that's how we could really learn from this type of a thing. There's a lesson for us to take from this if we could, you know, break through our own resistances, you know? Yeah, but sometimes it's good to look at other people first a little bit, just to, you practice that. No, we'll see if it's so good. We'll see, practice the skill of noticing. Like, you have to first develop the idea and see the trend in man and see it. Sometimes you see it by seeing a lot of examples and seeing other people, and, you know, not for the sake of just knocking other people, but sometimes you could see things by, you know, if you see flaws in other people, then you can kind of look at yourself, you know. So if you get practice about looking at flaws and questioning yourself, questioning, you know, breaking, you know, analyzing things, then, but then the value isn't just in going after the other people. It's, you know, you can use the other people as a tool of being able to see tendencies in the human nature, and then realize, wait a second, I'm also a human. There's a good chance I have these types of things also. So then to turn, you know.
In one place where that, this lesson applies in parenting, I know for myself that there's a temptation when a kid wants something to just let them have it, and you'd be like,
Why not
give it to them, you know?
Right, that's true.
They feel bad, they want it so much, they're going to cry.
Right.
And, you know, once a kid starts crying, it's very hard to, you know.
Right.
But as a parent, you have to know when to say no.
Right, that's true, that's a good example. You mean those are compassionate emotions or whatever.
Right.
Tell you you're supposed to be a good person, be nice to people, don't let them cry, whatever.
Right.
I mean, that's the challenge of parenting, is often to be able to be disciplined and to say no.
Otherwise you end up with a spoiled bride of a child.
It's true. Right. But you think you're being kind and merciful to your kid, but it's not. You're really being cruel to them and you're harming them.
Right.
It's true. These things go up their opposites. It's a good example. That's a good one, which is more reasonable in our lives. You know, maybe we're not going to have to kill somebody, but maybe we're going to have to be harsh with our children. It's like, you know, a little less intense, but the same kind of an idea.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, good. Good example. Yeah, okay, good. So I guess moving on a little bit. So then it says like this. So why did he tell him to hit him exactly? What's the point of that, right? We don't know yet. It doesn't seem like he knew yet, but now it's so then the Navi went and stood by the road to the king on the road, and he put like some sort of headband or something over his eyes so that he wasn't recognizable, because he was one of the Navim and the king would recognize him, so he basically disguised himself. So the king passed by, and he started crying out to the king, and he says, "Avdecha yotze b'kerav ha'melacha." Ah, your servant went out into the war. V'hinei ish sar, and a man turned. Vayavei la'ish. So a man called me aside, and he brought a person to me. Vayomer shmor zeh shazak. Could you guard this person for me? Guard him. If you pocket, and if you will guard him, let's see here. You pocket. If he escapes, Then you, I'll take you in his stead. Oh, kikar kesef deshkol. You're gonna have to give me whatever. Go kikar of kesef. Okay. And sure enough, your servant, me, I was got busy and I started getting distracted, doing this and doing that, whatever it is. And all of a sudden, my prisoner disappeared. You know your mishpat. You yourself proclaimed it. You agreed. So what are you coming to me for? Right? You agreed. The deal is that you either are going to give him the money or you're going to give yourself over. What's the question? Right? Pasha. Right? It's like, what kind of, don't complain to the king. You yourself signed on the line. By Maher, by Yasser, by Afer, Me'alainav. And sure, then the Navi quickly, it's interesting, quickly pulled off the headband from over his eyes. And then the king recognized who he was. By Omer Elo, Kolomar Hashem, Ya'an Shilachta as Ishchaimi Miyad, because you sent the Ishchermi is my enemy, the man of my war, when it was against Hashem, basically Ben Hadad, from your hand. Therefore, your nefesh is in the answer of his nefesh, and your nation is in the answer of his nation. So the Melech Yisrael went back to his house, very sad, depressed, sad, right? Okay.
I didn't understand the entire thing.
Okay.
What's going on there?
Pshat, or what's the question? Pshat is basically, he says again, what happened? Achav v'leh, tenat avga. So the Navi was going to rebuke him. But he didn't just go to him and say, hey, you let him go. He set up like a mock situation, a mashal, in order to rebuke him. So the marshal is he pretended I was a prisoner of war, and that's why he's bloody. He said, I just came from the battlefield, and I had this prisoner of war, and someone told me, watch my prisoner. And if you let him go, then I'm going to take you instead, or I'm going to make you pay $1 million or whatever. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I was guarding the prisoner, and I somehow he escaped. Mm-hmm. So the king said, so this is how the Navi pretended to be a guy at the war. So the king responded, he says, okay, well, you declared you're dead. You said it, that either you're going to be a prisoner or you're going to give $1 million. Mm-hmm. That's it. So the Navi quickly says, oh, that's it. Benatha, I mean, Nachav, you made the same mistake. You basically agreed to Hashem that you would go and conquer Benatha. That was the nature of what you were taken for. Mm-hmm. Right? That was the deal. The Navi told you that's what's going to happen. You're going to go and kill them, bring them out of Kiddush Hashem. Now you didn't do it. So that's it. So then you're going to die. You're going to be, you're an nefesh, and your arm is going to die. That was the nature of, God said, I'll make you guys victorious on the, if you basically do the Kiddush Hashem and you kill them. So now you did it, so then you're going to be punished. Right? So he's kind of using this mashal to open up his mind somehow, or to teach him this, you know, this idea. But to me the problem is what do you need this mashal for? I mean, just say, hey, just say, you're punished. Listen, Hashem said don't kill them, and this was the thing, and you're supposed to kill Ben Hadad. And why do you let him go? Why do you let him go? You're going to be punished for that. Why do you have to, like, is this such a complicated message that you have to set up this this mashal? Like, how exactly is this mashal helping?
Right? Maybe even at the last ditch effort to get him to do tshuva? Even though he's imminently going to be punished, Hashem is still holding out for the hope that God will do tshuva.
Right, but still, I mean, what's this doing? How's this showing him? What new idea is this showing him? Like, what would have happened if the Navi just went to him and says, listen, you didn't kill Ben Hadad. You know, forget the mask and the disguise. Just go to him and say, you didn't kill Ben Hadad, therefore Hashem's going to kill you. Now what would have happened? Like, what do you need to have this whole
That wouldn't
game?
Encourage him to do tshuva, because then he would say, okay, then I have no options here.
Well, that's kind of what happened when would he have done tshuva? I mean, before? I mean, this whole thing is very quick. So he pretended like he was this guy, and the moment he says, oh, you did it, then he quickly pulled off his thing and said, Hashem's going to kill you. So then when would he do tshuva at that point? So he could have done tshuva, just tell him straight off. after that point. He already told him.
He's telling him also. It's not like Achav is figuring it out. He's telling Achav the situation.
Well, Achav is figuring out the one thing.
He's just figuring out it in the captive case, but not in his case.
Oh, in his case. Yeah, right. Achav isn't figuring out. He's telling him. Right. So that's a question or an answer?
Yeah,
question?
It's a question.
You're right. It's not exactly giving him an opportunity. Yeah. Right.
But maybe if you said it to him directly, it would give him less of an opportunity because it's just something about like standing right in front of the Navi.
But here also still, no? I mean, now he told him, now the Navi tells him, so he's a Navi, he tells him this thing, and now what's he supposed to do?
It's like in the context of a role play, then.
But then what? After the role play, then what's going to happen? Like, I'm not following what do you mean exactly?
Well, maybe if the Navi just said it to him directly, then maybe he wouldn't be able to, like, prop, like, even...
It has more seriousness though as a role play. Like,
yeah,
he sees the Navi went through all this trouble to just do this for him, you know.
But it also makes like he gave the answer to the Navi. You know, he said, "Okay, you should die." You know, right. So then like he basically is like agreeing to that fact, and then when the Navi tells him like you're like, basically like hiding me, so then he like already said it. You know, it's also like, maybe like well help him to accept it.
Okay. I hear that, but I hear that assuming it's a tricky point, and I think that's what we have to figure out. It's like, if it's a simple Pasha thing, is that you didn't kill Benadad, you're supposed to, and therefore you're Chayav Misa, so then you don't need to make a fancy-schmancy, you know, teaching him. It must be there's something which isn't so simple here, and therefore, what you're saying is true, therefore he has to kind of do this thing to get him to see the idea. Like, for instance, this is this needs to be analyzed in its own right, but by David HaMelech when he took Bathsheba, you know, and sent what's it, Uriah, right? Is that Uriah? To the front, is that right?
Yeah.
To the front lines of the battle, and then Nasa Navi came and gave him the mashal of the sheep. You know, the rich man who gives the poor man one of his sheep, and, you know, takes the poor man's sheep. And you know, and then he says, David HaMelech says, oh, he's a Ben Mavis, that person, and then he says, you're that man. And then, you know, but that was something, I mean, that I guess also is paralyzed. But there, like, you see there's an emotion which David's on there, and he's trying to break and get through that. You know, I guess that's a question of why that's the story also. But in theory, you'd like to think when someone has to do some fancy schmancy mashal, it's because the point isn't a simple point. So it must be there's a point here which is not so simple, it's arguable. And what he's trying to do, and this is your point, but we have to work out the particulars, he's trying to use the mashal to let Achaz see the idea clearly and come to the conclusion, and that's it. And then afterwards, he's not going to be able to question it anymore. You know, so it's like you let a guy's guard down. When you give him a mashal and you don't tell him it's about him, then his guard is down. If you just come at him right away, then he's going to have all kinds of excuses or something, you know? So then we have to figure out exactly how that works, but...
Well, the mashal could help in two ways. One is that it demonstrates a point that may not have been clear. But also, as you just said before, seeing it in another person is sometimes easier than recognizing it in yourself.
Uh-huh.
Like if you, you know, you talk about the certain characteristic of misplaced rachamim, and Achav may be able to rationalize it for himself, but if he sees it from somebody else, it would be less. He'd be less likely to rationalize it, and he would.
That's true, but that was over there. That was the first point of misplaced rachamim. That one we explained, but this doesn't seem to be that, right? This is something else.
This is that he kept Ben-Hadad alive.
No, this is mercy. No, but this is the idea. But this mashal, like in this mashal with the prisoner of war or whatever, that misplaced rachamim, that he let him go because he had misplaced rachamim, or is that something else? You know?
He was just busy, he says.
He says he was busy. He took a prisoner of war. He said, oh, watch a prisoner of war. And then he got busy, and then next thing you know, the guy just escaped. Like, is that relevant to this? Is that what happened by Ben-Hadad and Achav? It's a little not exactly what happened, you know?
Maybe his rachamim is a distraction from what he was supposed to do.
And by the man prisoner also, the reason why he let him go is because he was merciful on the prisoner. Rachamim could be like a distraction. Right.
So
it could be, but if that's the case, it would seem to be maybe you should have picked a more direct mashal, you know? You could fit it in, but maybe there's, you know, I don't know, maybe we should analyze
the.
Head
with it.
Yeah, but maybe we should analyze that story and kind of see. It must be he's teaching him something. He's getting him to see an idea. I like what you're saying, is that he's getting him to see some idea which is not so simple to see. And the story is perfectly constructed to help him see an idea. You know, and once he sees that idea, you're the guy, that's your mistake, and then he sees the idea already, and then it's too late, you know? So I think that we just have to figure out what, you know, so maybe we should analyze the story and analyze the, you know, how it applies to here.
What does M-Yipake-Yipake mean?
Fuske. No, she says it means M-Yivrach, if you're on the way.
I know.
It sounds like it means opposite, but that's what he says.
It is interesting thinking about like taking prisoners though, like exactly what is the point
of taking prisoners.
Yeah. Like there's always a decision about what to do with them.
I guess, but I mean otherwise they're gonna kill you, right? I mean I guess you could just kill them, but you can't
most often not kill right away.
What?
You can get information out of them. I don't know if they need it to, but
alright. Yeah, it's true. It's a good question. I mean, what's the how relevant are the details? It's a good question. Like, is that important? Is that significant, or is that just I don't know? We have to analyze. We have to think. It's a good question, though.
Well, if he retained them, him as a prisoner rather than making the decision.
All right, that's true. He didn't do that either. He kind of just like whatever. He just neglected it. He just got busy. He got,
the last pasuk where it talks about Yelech Melech Yisrael, that's talking about Achav.
Yes.
So he recognized the point of, he must have recognized the point of this mashal at the end.
Well, first of all, he recognized the Navi just told him, Nasha, Nathakas, Nasha, you're going to be killed and you're going to be killed. So then, you know, even if he doesn't recognize the point, he's going to recognize he's going to be saddened by that news.
And the consequences.
It's not clear. I mean, either you could say both. You know, maybe one's Zara Vesaf, one's on the other. We'll see. The story in the next parak is like on the heels of this, of Achav bummed out by the story, you know. So I guess next time we'll try to do is to figure out this mashal and the lesson from it, and then I guess we can move to the next. Alrighty? Okay.